Hello, and thanks for listening to the Kept Faith Podcast. I'm Nick McCann, and I'm joined by what's left of Travis Russell.
Yeah, I don't, I'm not going to even say it. I'm as disappointed as I've ever been as a Padres fan. And I have, my attitude has fallen into the one of Jace Tingler, where there's no urgency and just almost apathetic. As long as my guys are doing okay and battling, you know, I guess that's all that really matters. As long as you try, that's all that matters, right? Winning is for losers, I guess. I don't know, Nick. I'm a broken human.
Let's ask our friend Dallas McLaughlin, who's on the line. Hey, Dallas, are you a glass half empty or glass half full guy?
I'm a glass half go Padres, Nick and Travis. Man, this I can't remember a more fun year from the get-go. It's just been, you know, a blast. I mean, it's been a real blast. Oh, the fact that because here's the thing that I don't think a lot of fans are understanding, guys. You know, this is a hardworking team. And and we've had so many bad years that we really need to celebrate all the small victories. And if one of those victories is finishing at 500 when we were World Series picks, then that's one of those victories. You know what I mean? We didn't finish under 500 yet.
Gee, I'm so glad you're staying positive, because you know what the most important thing to do is to stay positive all the time.
Keep the faith. Got to keep the faith, Nick.
And if you're negative, you're not keeping the faith.
You're not keeping the faith. You're not a real Padre fan if you're being negative. You're not. Just ask those guys on Twitter who just started following the Padres last year. If you're not a real, Padre fan, you're being negative.
Well, that's what I have to ask, is when did Padres fans become happy? This is not a thing that I'm used to in my 44 years of being a Padres fan. We are the best skeptics. We have the best memes. We are the best at like sobbing in the shower. We know how to do this. And like the fact that we're not allowed to be sad at one of our lowest points in franchise history makes me even more pissed off. Like, get out of here. You don't even know who you're talking to. If you're optimistic after this season, you're not a true Padres fan. Well, it's like the Warshak test or whatever.
Yeah, there's the overly positive people that just want you to stay positive and stay supportive no matter what. But then there's also the other people that are like, they relish in the losses, because that builds character and makes the winning so much sweeter. You know, that like sports idea that.
But we never.
It's all about resiliency. You're going to learn from your losses. You know what? Losers say that shit. You know.
Yeah, that's what losers say. Exactly. Here's my point. Like, a New York Yankees fan looking at this team is not going to cut them any slack, because they actually love the freaking Yankees. They don't love the players that aren't producing. Like, you know what I mean? Like, when you're a real fan of a real team, and I'm calling everybody on the Padres fandom out right now, because I'm hearing way too much like, well, we'll get them next year, guys. Well, at least the ownership spent money and there's something to look forward to. No, the ownership knows now that they can like, you'll celebrate mediocrity and they can keep putting crap out on the field and you'll still show up and root them on as they go out of the playoffs. The night that they lost and we were out of contention and everyone was like celebrating,
it's one of the worst.
The stadium was good. Like, there's so many people here. We rallied them back and we still lost. I'm like, shut up. They lost. They're done. It's over. Like, there's nothing to celebrate when you lose. This isn't a game of just like, we play to win, or why do you watch it at all? Like, I guess there's good plays to be had, and at least we saw some baseball. And that's what my grandfather always said after years and years of losing, God rest his soul. But like, I want winning. I want a winning attitude, and I want people's feet held to the fire if they don't produce.
I just don't understand this negativity, guys. I mean, if you're real Padres fans, you would understand that if we didn't, like, I just don't get it. I mean, we have Manny Machado. It's a win. I mean, why can't you guys just get on board with that? Like,
why is
Manny
Machado the only one pissed off on the entire team? He's the only one that's shown any emotion that's like, get your head out of your ass and get on the field and play. Sorry if you're yelling. I don't mean to blow out your eardrums.
Oh, no. I realize I'm the only parent at home, so I realize that I should have an ear available to the the baby monitor. That's why you weren't. No, you're turned down to the appropriate volume. I was prepared, Travis. I turned you down before we started recording. Well,
I think what it is, like, I'm sure by the time spring rolls around, we'll all be like jacked for baseball.
Yeah, you'd be pacified by then. Exactly.
They'll make some moves. We'll talk ourselves into how that last year was a learning experience for this young core, and we'll talk ourselves into it. That's fine. But can we be shitty and dark for like a weekend when this happens? Can I just have,
you know what? Please. You can be shitty and dark for as long as you want. Like, here's the deal, that you can tell who the new Padres Twitter and new Padres fans are by the ones who are like, you know, guys, like, you need to be positive. Because they don't know what the fuck they're talking about. Like, and here's the thing. I want to point out something, and I'm going to name a name, and I'm naming a name because I like this guy. He's gotten a lot of shit. And I like him though. James Clark from East Village Times. I enjoy James.
Yeah.
What he's done and what he's doing is cool. And I dig it. And you know, he gets shit.
He's grinding, Dallas.
He's grinding.
He has been grinding for years. He battles. Listen, he really shows up every night and he does his thing.
No, I mean, listen, there's going to be some challenges along the way, but it's really at the end of the day, you know, had some good hits, had some good looks out there, really connected well with the ball. But, you know, he is a very positive fan, but he also like doesn't tell other people to not be negative. You know, like it goes back and forth. It's like, you just be a fan the way you want to be a fan. Don't tell me how to be a fan of the Padres. I'm not telling you how to be a fan of the Padres. We're allowed to be negative. We're allowed to be mad. We're allowed to be pissed off. We're also allowed to be whatever. Fine. I'm good with going 500 every year. Who gives a shit? I like going to baseball games. I love San Diego. I like watching people hit home runs. And that's the extent of my fandom. That's also fine. Stop telling people how to be fans. I just don't understand that mentality. Like, yes, this season was horrifyingly frustrating. Like, we had a fantastic team on paper and they completely fell apart. They completely got bulldozed over by the rest of the league. I mean, no, but the list of what went wrong is so long. I literally, the other day, I told you guys I was going to write something. I started to write something and I got so bored with my own post because I just kept making a list of what went wrong that I'm like, what's the point of this? Like, other people are going to write the same thing I'm writing. I have no new perspective on this because it just fucking sucked.
Yeah.
And like, it's okay to feel that way.
Yeah. And I think what you're talking about is it, the worst part about this is we didn't get a season that worked out in at least some kind of version that we were hoping for. Maybe they make the NLDS and get their ass kicked or something like that. But that would feel different than this. This is a complete falling apart of a plan. It's tarnishing people that we're supposed to trust, you know? And I think the hardest thing for me is we're not just excited about going into the tournament, and we're forced to re-examine things that we've spent the last, on this podcast, like six solid years doing, like examining the decisions that have been made, the hires. Like, if they fire Jace Tingler and they hire somebody new, I don't want to go through the whole thing where we're like evaluating his early interviews and saying, oh, I like this guy. This guy has a different outlook or something, you know, trying to talk ourselves into believing that this person is something better than we've already had. I just don't want to deal with this again. I don't want to go through it again this off season where we're just re-examining. That was supposed to be off the table. We're supposed to like get overly upset about some decision that Tingler made in the playoffs, whether or not he's doing this.
I want to be mad. I want to be Dave Roberts mad. You know what I mean? I want to be a Dodger fan who's mad at Dave Roberts' handling of the relief pitching in the playoffs. That's what I want to be mad at.
I don't want to evaluate these guys based on, you know, lineup construction in May, you know. Well,
here's the thing it's kind of funny. Like, I haven't listened to another Padres podcast in a very long time. And I do not mean that in any disparaging way. I have a 6-month-old. It's amazing that I can do this podcast once a month.
It is.
But like, I know everybody's been putting out a lot of stuff and it's been crazy this year. And so I was about to say, like, I think we were the first ones to talk about it, but I have no real context for that. But like, Nick, you've been very vocal about AJ and how much he is probably the problem. I know our mutual friend Joe is very against that idea. Not very against that idea. He's very skeptical of that. And I get where he's coming from. But at the same time, like, I feel like after you guys had Eno on, which I'm so bummed I wasn't on that episode, but after you had Eno on as a guest, and he kind of talked about the fundamental issues that are going on in the organization with developing players, and then we start talking about AJ. Well, now Eno's going on like all the podcasts talking about how the Padres organization sucks. And like, more and more stuff is coming out about how AJ is just in charge and you don't do anything without AJ say so. And like, that's the kind of thing that happens with a season like this, where we were supposed to be very, very good. We were supposed to be challenging the Dodgers for the NL title. And, you know, obviously nobody saw the Giants coming, but that was the thing. That was the take. It was good. It was us and the Dodgers, and everybody else was way far behind. And when you have a collapse like this, that's so embarrassingly terrible, you're going to now be in the forefront of the media. When so many media talking heads came out and picked you as a favorite, yes, and then you fell apart, guess what? Now the light is on how bad you were. And that's going to expose everything that's been coming out about AJ being the overlord, Tingler not having any experience and really any say in what happens. I mean, it's ridiculous. It's stupid. And I'm literally enjoying all of the notoriety we're getting for how poorly run the organization is, because someone needs to call it out and something needs to be done.
Yeah. And I don't want to like turn on Preller just because the season was so bad, but before the games, at least last week, there was the Padres like POV episode, you know, where Gwynn's on, and I only hear like the first couple minutes of it before I turn it off, because it's always on repeat. And I have AJ in my head talking about how it was kind of like Tatis's idea to move to the outfield. And of course that wasn't Tatis's idea. He never would have thought of that. But the way that AJ phrased it, thinking about how this season went, I felt really manipulated. Like we say in Preller, we trust, but I don't think he's like very trustworthy. And I think he kind of does stuff in a manipulative way where it's like, oh yeah, Tatis is, you know, he's willing to do whatever for the team. And, you know, he kind of came up with this idea because we got Frazier. And so maybe when, you know, that's not what happened, you know, his deal didn't work. They had nowhere to put Frazier. And so now we're moving to Tatis. And that is literally when this team started to fall off. Like, I know correlation is not causation, but when they had this weird idea to move to Tatis to the outfield, the team chemistry like broke.
Yeah.
And I just don't feel like Preller is as honest as we think he is. I think he made some flashy moves that totally, you know, bought us into him. And now we're like, maybe he's a lot of smoke and mirrors.
Let me go ahead real quick, Dallas. The thing that you just said though, Travis, I mean, you prefaced it with, I don't want to disparage Preller. Now, where does that impulse come from? I feel it too. We love him for some reason.
There's something about him. We don't want
to blame him, because I think a lot of us, we've did it on this podcast for a very long time. We thought that we had a cheat code with him.
Yes.
We thought that he was like this wizard and he was our secret weapon, and that he was reinventing what this role could be, and that was going to take us to the promised land. And I think national media has picked up on the way he was positioned as like a rock star, and they're starting to really poke holes in that. And it's valid.
Yeah.
Well, the thing you have to really like break down with AJ, and it's funny because we were joking the other day, last week or whatever, we were texting each other about getting t-shirts made. And I wanted to do one of those like blank and blank and blank.
But yeah,
blank.
We're still going to do that. I mean, hours. I have a newborn. Like, you have a 6-month-old.
Yes, totally. And what I figured out, and like, so I was like, you know what I want to do is I want to go back to when AJ started, and I want to get the win loss records and do that and that, yes, and that and that. And I did. And guess what? He's had one winning season, and it was last year, a season we all collectively think isn't real.
Well,
and it obviously wasn't real. It was the anomaly. And what's funny about it is this season, the first half of the season, we were great. We can't miss. We kind of floundered a little bit before the break, but like the first half of the season, we were amazing. So it's like what AJ so far has been able to do, the best he's been able to do, the absolute best AJ Preller as a GM and president of baseball operations has been able to do is build a team that was really great for 60 games. That's all he's been able to do. He has had losing season after, and not like almost 500 seasons, embarrassingly bad losing seasons. And you can go, well, he didn't have the money. Well, he didn't have this. Well, he didn't have that.
He was purposely tanking to get picks.
How long have we been playing that fucking game? How long? How long have we been told what 2018 is the year? 2018 is the year. Well, 2019, we pushed the window to 2019. It's actually 2020. And it's like, you can only do this for so long before you go, okay, if the guy who's in charge of every decision-making has only had one winning season, and it was a shortened season, it was 60 games, then maybe he is the problem. Like, you can't do four managers. You can't do two pitching coaches. You can't do three bench coaches. You can't do all this turnover with the coaching staff and the scouting staff before you realize it probably is the guy in charge. I don't see any, like, you can switch it all up again if you want. Get all new people in charge. But if he's the one making the decisions and telling everybody else what to do, he's the fucking problem.
Well, and we have enough examples. I know we talked about this before, but of players being developed in San Diego and then leaving and doing well, and us bringing in other talent and then not living up to it. So I don't even trust at this point. It's like, well, if we get rid of Grisham because he hasn't performed, and we get rid of Pham because, you know, he isn't the leader we wanted him to be, and we somehow, you know, get someone to eat Hosmer, and we had never developed Myers into anything special or his even potential. What makes us think that, like, shifting talent is going to make any difference at all? We can't do stuff with the talent that's there.
Well, we thought he was a rock star GM because two things. One, that first flurry of trades that was, you know, spectacular and made Padres fans feel relevant for the first time in a very, very long time, which I won't discount. Like, I felt good as a Padres fan for the first time in a long time.
I'll never forget that Christmas party that year. It was amazing. Exactly.
And as Nick has mentioned a million times, he's a super scout. Like, he's always been known to find young talent. He can do that. He can do that better than a lot of people. What he's proven that he can't do is develop that talent into major league talent. He can find it. He just can't do anything with it. And that's the problem. Like, that's the overarching problem, is that he is somebody who is really good at one thing and could not do anything else. Like, I'm sorry. He just can't. Like, for the first time last offseason, that was the first time he actually filled holes. We needed pitching. He went out and got a ton of pitching. That's the first time I've ever looked at what he's done and been like, yeah, he filled the problem areas. So I'm honestly done with AJ. I don't think we have any chance of getting rid of him. I think he will fire everybody else around him until it's finally, you know, Uncle Ron or.
Well, I think the big question is, you know, does he have the ability to admit that the most important hire that he's made was wrong? You know, I mean, the hiring of AJ Preller and the first flourish of trades and everything that started from that, positioning him as a rock star is like probably the most exciting thing that invigorated the fan base over their whole ownership reign. So it's like, can he admit that he was wrong? Every time you hear Seidler in an interview, he just seems to be blown away by being around AJ. He just thinks it's like, this guy's amazing and he's interesting to watch. I like watching him work. And he just kind of seems like, isn't this baseball thing kind of weird? You know, like, I don't know. Like, if he's going to be able to admit that he was wrong, and that's the real question about, you know, whether or not this organization can fix itself. And he's been able to kind of duck out of the conversation about this pretty much however he wants. And I don't know if Peter's going to step up and admit that we do have to make a change like that. That's hard to do.
If there's ever a season to have Uncle Ron on the radio.
I think Uncle Ron is the big winner here, because I think, you know, we thought that he was this big problem, but, you know, he would get on the radio and put players in check at least. I don't know.
Yeah. He was like the only actually piss and vinegar in the organization, you know? And I feel like that's totally lacking. Travis. What?
No, it's just, what a saying. I haven't heard that in so
even
long.
Ron, that's the old school. Like, I'm full of vigor, man.
I literally used to have a t-shirt that said official member of the Piss and Vinegar Club.
But I think that's, I honestly, and I don't want to get into deeper things, but that's missing in a lot of culture. We've become so passive. And this team has that like passive approach, where if we just, you know, we're patient and we grind and we do the right thing, it'll be rewarded. And it's like, there's no sense of urgency and like, it's do or die today, guys. And right. Anyways.
But Ron and Peter always had this feeling like, isn't it cool? I just think a baseball operations department is just fascinating. It's almost like they're a fantasy camp where they get to watch scouts and general managers and, you know, talent evaluators work in this other field that's not their own. And it's like, cool, I'm glad you guys are really fulfilled and this is interesting to you. It would be interesting to me too, but, you know, you have a whole fan base and a whole city that's out here dying for a a title, throwing money around. Dallas and I were at the game on Wednesday. I mean, you go to Petco Park now and you have to like, you have to spend money just to be there. I mean, it's,
you got a second mortgage, right?
Yeah.
Well, and here's the thing too. It's like, Nick, you and I went and it was packed. It was so packed. And you're like, this team sucks. And it's so packed. It's crazy. Yeah. Like that's the hardest part about being a Padres fan. And it always has been, is getting ownership to do anything, because they're still going to draw the same amount of fans. This is the most fans we've drawn in a season in a long time. It's going to always happen because it's San Diego.
Well, that's here's the other transition that I'd like to bring up in our discussion is, I really wonder how much of the Padres organization is looking at this season the way we do. They're looking at like bottom line. They're looking at jersey sales. They're looking at revenue in the food court, like all those things. And when the, like I said, when the fans show up on Saturday, like they did, and they root and they cheer for a loser, I was the owner would sit back and go, you know what? This sucks, but my bottom line is good. You know, I'm making money.
Yeah.
Next year, I'm raising prices and everyone's paying for them. I mean, we had the conversation around the dinner table tonight about our season tickets and the fact that they're going to be significantly higher, over 10% higher next year on average. I think some season, like the upper echelon, like the $20,000 folks are going to be paying like $26,000 kind of. You know what I mean? Like it's getting crazy what they're asking for. But I think that like we're in the minority is where I'm going with this. After most San Diegans like that we have superstars. They know we have Tatis. He's still young. The future's bright. And so maybe the ownership goes, we don't really need to make changes. This was a little bump in the road on our 10-year path.
Well, yeah. And I think if we're, I don't want to sound like, you know, I think you're in the same boat with me. It's just, I'm not trying to be like out for blood, trying to get people fired. I understand these are real people with jobs, and it's like, I don't, and I hate to see it happening, but I think that, you know, like this year they spent a lot of money. That's undeniable. Yeah. They spent a lot of money for real. They went in, and you know, I am grateful for that. No matter, you know, whatever problems I have with the organization, they did put their money where their mouth was.
Yes, they did.
And I think that's why people showed up, and people can feel that. People, fans are smarter. Fans get smarter every year, I think. And they understand when the ownership is really going for it. I don't really know how much more they could have gone for it in the last off season.
Right.
I mean, we can bang them on the trade deadline and everything, but you know, it does make me think a lot about the decision to, if they have to move, really, really overhaul the entire organization. Is that a lot harder to do than actually just spending money? I mean, I'll go back to it. Like, I just think that the idea of this ownership brass saying that AJ Preller was not the guy is just a hard thing to wrap your head around, especially since all that you've done for so long, pumping him up. I mean, he makes the flourish of trades in 2015. We all decide he's this wizard, and we're making t-shirts about our GM, which is really dangerous, I think. Like to have this thing where you believe that you have
There's a lot of good Brian Cashman t-shirts.
I mean, like maybe we need a GM who's not at the forefront, who's like this quasi celebrity or something. But I don't know if it's in Peter to be able to do that. I think he just kind of likes AJ. He thinks he's fascinating. And I don't know, like, and if they're making money hand over fist, and yeah, they can take the sting of a bad season, but they know that in the spring, we're just going to be jacked for, we're going to want to go look at grass and drink beer. I think that's kinda...
Yeah. I mean, it's like, here's the hardest part about all of this. Like, it's personal to me. And that's the hardest part.
It's what?
I said it's personal to me.
Yeah.
Here's the thing. Like, there's a couple of things I wanted to talk about.
Don't cry, Dallas. It's okay.
No, I won't cry. For some reason, my voice is all fucked up. I totally lost my train of thought now. Damn it. But okay, I'm going to skip to the second thing because I forgot about the first thing. But the second thing, the whole, like, oh no, this was there. So on paper, we had this roster that like totally made sense. We all felt really confident about it. And it was like from the get-go, when somebody started like kind of not succeeding at the plate, it was a pretty short hook. Like Grisham wasn't hitting. So all of a sudden he just kind of was playing every other day. Then he got hurt. You know, it's like a lot of injuries played into this. Like Pham wasn't hitting. So then he sat for 3 days and then came back. Like there seemed to be no rhyme or reason to a lot of what was happening on the field as far as the players go. And it was also strange because on paper at the beginning of the season, I was like, I'm fine with Pham out there. I'm fine with Myers out there. And honestly, I was fine with Hosmer at first. Like to me, it's not, to me, at the beginning of the season anyway, it wasn't like a hole, you know, like I didn't look at Hosmer as like this hole at first that he was booting every play and he was, you know, couldn't hit the ball. Like, you know, he still has an average that is somewhat respectable. But again, I'm not a Hosmer defender. I just didn't see it as this glaring problem at first. So like the fact that everything kind of fell apart, and again, why I compare it to the 1997 Padres, because on paper we had this juggernaut of a team and they just fell apart. It's like the example of what could go wrong will go wrong. What can't go wrong will go wrong. And it did. And like, I as a fan became very, very upset. We talked about this a couple weeks ago when like people didn't understand. And I've been pushing for this for years on this podcast that like emotions play into how players play. Like people never want to admit it because there's not a quantifiable stat for it. And I understand that. Like, I get it. The game has become so mathematical and I'm not taking anything away from that, but you can't take away the fact that when you show up to work, how you feel about work does make you work a different way. It's the same for everybody. And I don't understand this mentality that, well, it's different for them. Well, why and how? If anything, it's worse for them because they're showing up and there's 40,000 people screaming at them. And that's, but because they make $1 million, like that's supposed to make it easy for them. Like
they're 20, but yeah.
But you know what I mean? Like they're making millions of dollars and somehow that's supposed to just do away with the 40,000 people that are screaming at them. That's supposed to do away with the fact that even though people go, it's a kid's game, well, they're playing a kid's game. Well, if it's a kid's game, then why are they the only ones that can do it? Then everybody could fucking do it if it was a kid's game, because you would be good and you'd be on the field too, but you're not. They are, because they're the best, absolute best at doing it. And they're up there. And to think that their mentality when they come into work doesn't play into it is foolish. And I got really upset at Padres Twitter, I guess, that like we were fine with Tatis being upset and playing poorly. Like when he was moved to the outfield, clearly he was, and the Padres weren't doing well, he was clearly not happy. You could see it. He wasn't doing his little skip step. He was just not happy. And he said a lot, you know, I want to play shortstop. Like, I mean, he didn't come out and say, I want to play shortstop, but he was definitely going into it. So we were like totally fine. And we understood that. Well, yeah, Tatis is upset. He's playing poorly. He's upset. And I say that too. Like if I get upset at work, it's going to affect my day at work. It's the same thing for everybody. It's a job. However, like for Hosmer, it's like, well, we tried to trade him over and over again and we couldn't do it. And now he's playing terribly. And all the people that really, really liked Hosmer are also playing terribly. And the fan base is like, fucking get over it. Get over it. All right. That's part of the game. That's part of baseball. You can't do both. You can't say that Tatis is fine to be upset and that's why he's playing poorly, but then tell Hosmer and the rest of the guys to get over it because emotions don't have to come into baseball. That's just not the case. Like, I'm sorry that the players liked Hosmer. Like, I didn't, but the players did. Obviously, he liked being here. And that trade really fucked the team over. Like, the trade that didn't happen, it was a mess. I mean, remember when they traded Franmil and the team like totally went on a nosedive for like 3 weeks? Like, these guys like each other. They like showing up and playing together and being on the same team. Whether they're good or not is irrelevant.
Yeah.
And I think it's hard for people to understand that.
It may be hard for people to understand that, but this is what I have a problem with. Because you're kind of apologizing for the team. And I don't even think like Tatis being upset about moving to the outfield is justified for Tatis. Like, buck up, Buttercup. as a 44-year-old man who has been a fan of this team as long as I can remember, we are the last consideration in where the importance of this should land. And we say, well, they get paid $20 million and it's really hard and all that. But guess what? We pay to watch them play and they suck and they use these stupid, like, emotional things as an excuse. And I'm sorry, it doesn't work for me. If we were in New York,
but hold on, but
if we were in New York, what's his name? Aaron Judge doesn't get to pout. They say, get off your little ass, little boy, and go out there and play. Until you hit home runs, I have zero sympathy for you. And for whatever reason in San Diego, I don't know if it's because we're all like stoned or we're all drunk or we're all just like happy because of sunlight, we justify mediocrity and we accept it. And we go, well, they're emotional. Well, Will Myers is really trying, you guys. He's really good and he's really trying. We should give him a break. And no, Will Myers has sucked as a Padre. Like, it is he has been a waste of space since he came over here. We try to move him all around the infield. Hosmer has been a waste of space. Like, look at his numbers since he's come over here. It's ridiculous what we're paying him to play. And yet we try to somehow go, well, they're professionals and they're trying. And no, any other city that really cares about their sports would be grilling these guys. We'd tar and feather them and run them out of town.
First off, you're saying that doesn't work for me. Doesn't fucking matter. It's not up
well,
to
it
you.
It should.
If it
works like, for it doesn't work. It works in every other city.
No,
like,
it doesn't.
Tatis is right. It's not about you. Shut your ass and get on the field.
That was about him arguing with the umpire. And
but
like,
it's the same for the rest of the team. Okay. You guys are sad that we almost traded Hosmer. Buck up, Buttercup, and get out there and win a game because the fans in San Diego deserve it. And you're getting paid $20 million. So get out there and perform. You suck, Hosmer. You suck. Perform or you suck. And I just like, we got to keep saying that as a fan base, or they're always just going to keep like, oh, well, we're going to go get, you know, white queso and chill at the beach. Like, we really have that mentality and we justify it as fans.
Okay. First off, you're assuming that that's the way that every fan base feels about every team in baseball, which I don't. I mean,
I live in New York and
true.
I listen to that sports radio and yeah,
it's
they
New York, but
yeah.
New York's its own little place. You can't compare. They haven't in a long time. And Aaron Judge has gone through emotional issues and has gone through it. Randy Johnson sucked as a Yankee because he couldn't handle the Yankee press. It's happened to so many times. It's actually a thing when people don't want to go to the Yankees that they don't want to go because they don't want to have to deal with all that bullshit. Like,
okay,
Zach Greinke was famously
a little bit of it.
I don't disagree that like we can get mad. I'm not saying like don't get mad at the players and don't be a fan. I'm not saying that at all. Like, you can do whatever you want, but I'm just saying like just because like for us we're like, well, buck up. But what the fuck does that mean? Who they don't give a shit and they shouldn't. That's like me coming to work and me going like having a bad day at work and somebody going, well, buck up, man. You got to write some jokes.
Yeah, you should, or you're not going to get paid. That's how life works. If you show up and your
attitude, it does.
You're getting paid to do a job, not to like bring all your baggage into it. And if the guys get upset because Hosmer is going to get traded and they let the season fall off because of it, they don't deserve the money they're getting paid.
I will agree with you that there is a point in time where you have to go, okay, it's time to move past.
Oh, I'm
this.
So like, and I, my life is totally screwed up. So I totally get it. But like, I don't get to bring that to a job and say, well, I didn't do what I was supposed to do today. I didn't drive the bus correctly because, you know, I ran into other things because I had an emotional time. They fired my other favorite bus driver. And so I decided just to, you know, run the red lights today. And I feel like the way Hosmer was playing was not up to major league standards. He was literally deficient at a job.
Sure. But that's not the argument. Like, Hosmer was deficient at that job the entire season, even when the team was doing well. It's like, did he post a negative war this year? I think he posted a negative war this year. But like you're not going to get an argument with me on that, Travis. I'm just saying that there is an emotional element to the game for the players. It's always there. For some people, it's harsher than others. You look at Khalil Green or Zach Greinke, people who literally have had breakdowns because of it. And you can't discount that because they make millions and they're baseball players. I just don't think that's fair. Like, that's
I get what your point is. There's a difference between like being emotional and pouty and emotional and like, all right, we're going to overcome. And I feel
like Travis, you're saying that fans should be hold them accountable. For that.
Yes. And we are very apologetic as fans. Yeah. And as players, there's two approaches to life. And I'm learning this a lot in my personal life, and I don't need to get all, but you can either like be a victim, because we all can look at things that have been done to us and go like, I can be a victim. I can pout about it. We're going to trade Hosmer, and he's my favorite person, or Tingler, or whoever Myers bitches about on Fortnite. You can be a victim and pout about it. Or you can go, you know what? These are the circumstances. It sucks Hosmer is traded. I miss Franmil. Where's Luis Urias? All this stuff. But we got to win, because the fans in San Diego deserve winning. And this team did not have that approach to me. They sat on their hands and they pouted because things weren't going their way. Their strikes weren't being called on their favor. And even in the game that Tatis almost lost his mind, we had like two runs, or almost like 1.6 runs given to us, because calls went mostly our way that game. The game that Tingler got thrown out of, we were actually in favor from the ump. So I guess that's my point, is like, stop whining, stop bitching, stop being the victim, because stuff didn't go your way. We didn't get Scherzer. It didn't go out there and perform and do what you're getting paid to do. And this team, to me, just totally like gave up and sat on their hands and bitched and had pouty faces.
Yeah. Well, hey, you know, after this next week, they'll probably have a losing record.
That's amazing.
No, they probably will, because the two teams they're playing are like the two best teams in baseball, and they have incentive to play hard to stay out of the one game playoff. But say after the last game of the season, and they do fire Tingler and they don't fire AJ, I mean, are you guys going to need, I'm just asking this for everybody, but like, are you going to need a hire that you will believe will have autonomy from AJ if they decide to give him another manager shot? Like, will you need to believe that it's somebody separate from his control, or that like can stand up to him? And what kind of hire? I mean, obviously the Bochy thing is looming out there. People seem to think that's just going to solve everything. Mm-hmm. And that would be a situation, just because he has so many ties with the media here and fans, obviously. But with Bochy aside, we know how we all feel about Bochy, and I think that'd be fascinating to watch. But what if it's not him? Would you need somebody who is not somebody who you could believe is not an AJ guy? And would you like that setup?
Someone who's their own person? Yeah.
Yeah. Or would you? How would you have to believe that to be on board with it? That's my question.
Listen, I mean, here's the deal. I'm going to be on board next year, regardless. I mean, we're sitting here and I'm bitching be tweeting, and we're moaning. I'm be like, we'll see. I mean, we'll see. This year, I was just so excited. They had, you know, like Yu Darvish has been long one of my favorite pitchers to watch in baseball. And so, he gave a bad Yu Darvish year, which is still a good year for a lot of pitchers. Right. But like I don't know who's going to be on the team next year. Will probably gauge my interest. I probably watched 80% of the games this year, which is something I haven't done in a long time. So we'll see. But as far as the manager goes, you know, I'd love to see Bochy just for fun, honestly. And if he can fix it, he can fix it. But I just want to see a manager that has managerial experience. That's all I want to see. And now I'm not talking like third base coach or pitching coach. I got into a little Twitter back and forth, not in like a negative way, with some people about that. And everybody's like, well, that doesn't really matter. I mean, look at this guy and look at this guy. And I'm like, well, it didn't matter in that situation for that guy. But like here in San Diego, we've tried the no managerial experience now for four guys. Like, what if we tried it the other way once? What about that? Would that be okay? Like, yeah. I'd honestly, at this point, take Bud Black back. Like, I just can, like,
no, somebody. I actually agree with you. I can't believe I'm saying that.
Well, and it's like one of those things where it's like Bud Black, even Andy Green. It's like these guys, the whole thing about being a manager, we used to talk about this with like NFL coaches. The whole thing about that is you get your first job, you suck ass, you go somewhere else, you do a little better, you get your next job and you're great. And it's because it takes time to learn how to fucking do it.
And then you're North Turner. And once you finally get there, you're the worst one ever.
Quick. You just like, and there's going to always be those rookie managers that are anomalies, and they figure it out. They pull it out. They do great. It's always going to happen. Always. But like people keep, well, look at the Giants. And I'm like, oh, you mean Gabe Kapler in his second managerial job? Yeah, sure. Right. It's a second managerial job. And he was allowed to hire like everybody. So yeah, I get it. Like, so that's my whole point. I just want, if they could hire somebody that's been a manager somewhere and been semi-successful, I'll probably be on board.
I gotta say, and I don't want to talk about what I always talk about recently, but since becoming a hardcore Bitcoiner, they have a saying in the Bitcoin community that is, do not trust, verify. And so I am honestly going to be skeptical, and I'm not going to apologize for it. I'm going to be cynical. I'm going to probably be rude until August or a year from now, I'll say. You know what I mean? And give it a real season, because I'm so sick of my constant excitement and blind, you know, enthusiasm for this team that just constantly shoves a hot sword through my heart. So until we get a manager that I can verify is legitimate and knows what they're doing, and Tingler has proven to me, especially in the past 2 weeks, that he has no freaking clue almost what baseball is. He just wants the guys to not be mad at him. That's my only opinion of him, is he'll say positive things or skew a bad performance in a way so that, like, when he walks in the locker room, the guys won't snub him or, you know, whatever that is. And he's literally useless. So again, I will wait and verify that the new manager is worthy. Even Bochy at this point, you know what I mean? Like, to me, that's more of a marketing move than anything else. Who knows what Bochy's capable of now?
But he's capable of saying, oh, that's the printout that you're sending me, AJ, and like throwing it on the floor and peeing on it, like in Major League. I mean, he can do that.
See, now, and then that would be the verification I needed. I would not trust. I would be verified.
If they are keeping AJ, this is the scenario I'm thinking of. If they keep AJ and they bring in another manager, do you want autonomy from the front office? Like, do you want, because it sounds like the players want that. If you listen to what they're saying they have this mistrust of the front office based on what happened, I think, around the trade deadline and all those rumors. But like, what if Seidler's not going to get rid of AJ and they're going to bring somebody in? I mean, just, I'm not saying they should hire this guy, but like a profile like this, like if Dusty Baker came in, I would believe that he would not be taking his lineups from AJ, and maybe that would make me feel better. And that, maybe that's Bruce Bochy or somebody like that, or Tony La Russa, somebody in that class where it's like, we're going to allow AJ to stockpile talent, like what he's good at, and then have a cutoff at the clubhouse where that person gets to, you know, run everything.
Manage the team. Cool. Yeah.
Look at the White Sox and look at the Padres. Very similar trajectories. And what got the White Sox over the hump? A veteran manager who knew what he was doing. Like, and that's not always the fix. But when you're dealing with like a couple superstars and a lot of young talent, you just need somebody who knows what's going on. Like, I mean, that is, and I can be wrong with that. That's fine. I'll be wrong with that. But so far with the Padres, I'm not wrong. They haven't been able to figure it out. And they keep bringing in these nobody managers who also can't figure it out. And if that's because they're taking their cues from AJ, then I would love, even if next year we had a 500 season again, but we had a manager who was constantly fighting with the GM. Oh, fuck, bring it on. Give it to me. I'll take it. Somebody who challenges Boy Wonder, I'll friggin' take it.
And a strength and conditioning coach where we cut down on maybe half the injuries. I think that's possible for a team to not, where everyone doesn't get injured, is possible. I think Manny is the only person that has not been injured this year. It's insane.
I think going back to the having a coach with autonomy thing, I think when we look back at this season, the central moment is probably the Fraser trade and what that did. Now, as somebody who has more experience, could they massage that in a clubhouse better than Tingler did? I think you could find somebody who could do a better job of that.
Well, you could. And it's like, I think that if there was a manager, I think if there was a manager who felt like they had a say, and I guarantee you Tingler doesn't. I mean, why would he feel like he has an open forum with AJ to make decisions? Like that whole Rothschild was my decision. Yeah, I'm sure it was. Jace. But if you had a Bochy who maybe cared a little bit more about like communicating what the clubhouse needs and wants with the GM, I feel like he could have smoothed that over with everybody. And to the point with Hosmer, in the same vein, it's like Hosmer, you know, like you're paying him a lot of money. If you couldn't move him, you couldn't move him. But you know what you could have done? You could have not even worried about trying to move him, because, you know, you could have been very private about it and seen that there was no market for him. Kept him on the team, ate that salary, let him be on the bench, and put Cronenworth at first. That way you still get the guy. You still get the guy that people like. He's still playing, you know, every fourth or fifth day. Yeah. It's like, he's still going to play, but he's not the starter anymore. And we don't need to worry about the issues. And he doesn't need to get shit on every day by fans. You fix the problem without having to go through all these, you know, all these hurdles and then screwing it up. And like, I feel like if you had a guy in the clubhouse who could suggest that, and yeah, it's never going to be good. People are going to be like, well, I don't want to pay all that money for a bench player. Well, you know, oh, well, you don't get to make that decision. Right. Mistakes might've been
it's
made.
Not your money. Don't worry about
but
it.
But if this fixes the problem, then great. And I think if you had like a real manager that those kind of situations with Frazier or whatever, they can figure that out. They can smooth it and be the voice of reason with AJ, where I don't think Tingler has that.
Cachet. He doesn't.
Yeah. Thank you. Cachet.
He doesn't have the ability to say, I've been in a pennant race and I've been through this before, Hosmer. You're going to play every third day against certain, you know, pitchers, and that's going to be the best way for us to win. I mean, coming from Bruce Bochy is a different thing than coming from Jace Tingler or somebody like that. It's just like, I don't think AJ really counted for that. I don't think he thought about it. I think he just thinks baseball is something that's, I think we said it before, he lacks humanity. He doesn't understand like well, human beings.
Nick, I mean, you said this for years, but it's like a manager is pretty useless. But the one thing a manager does do is controls the egos. Like that's the whole job.
The point, yeah.
So it's, and you got somebody like Bochy. I mean, you look at him in the dugout, he's asleep half the time, but
maybe that's like, calculated. Maybe
that's totally calculated.
Like,
instead of up there with his little iPad every 2 seconds doing this.
I think he's so well liked by all his players that Bochy's biggest talent is, I think he just sits there stoically and the guys don't want to make him disappointed. And that's enough to win three, to be the best manager probably of his generation. And I don't know, like,
it's, I mean, it's honestly, it's like, for the early 2000s, it's him and Torrey. I mean,
and he's better than Torrey. So I think,
I think so. He had less talent with all of those championships. He had way less,
much
talent
less than Torrey. Yeah. Torrey had like the all-star team from heaven.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, hey guys, this is good. I needed this.
Yes. Thank you for letting me scream a little
no,
bit.
No, hey, I think it's all good stuff to think about, things that we deserve to be able to say. You know, you brought up James Clark earlier, and it's like, you know, people like that and, you know, the stuff we've done, it's, there's all these people that have really spent a lot of time examining this horrible run they've been on for the last, you know, 13, 14 years. And it's, now we have to re-examine again. We don't get to have a NLDS preview podcast, and that's so we're the victims here, and I think that's what we've established.
And if guys like James Clark have been doing this for as long as they have and they still find a way to be positive, more power to you. Like if you're out there and you've been doing this for 10 years and you still find a way to be positive, like good for you. But if you started watching 2 years ago and you're going to tell me I can't be negative, dude, fuck off.
Right.
Yes. If you did not live and die in the 1998 World Series, like I don't know what to say. Like it's been way more than 13 years for me. We have not had a successful season since 1998. That was the last time.
Well, I mean, we had the middle 2010s, there were some good teams that we were able to get behind, but I mean, I get what you're saying. 98.
Here's what I'm saying is I went downtown after we beat the Atlanta Braves to go to the World Series in San Diego. I don't care about what they did last year in the streets and all that. It has never been the same. We have not been the same city since 1998. The joy and the exuberance in this town has not even been closely replicated since then. And that's what I'm looking for. Like more than anything, my frustration is not being able to like celebrate with my city in like the most innocent feeling. Like not, you don't have any, you know, what do you want to say? Like you don't hold back when you win like that. And I can only imagine what a World Series would be like. And the fact that we're not, I don't feel like we're getting any closer to that is where this ultimate frustration comes from.
Well, Travis, you and I texted, and I firmly believe I envision my 7-year-old daughter at some point.
Yes.
Coming and bringing like the World Series ticket stub to my gravestone, because that's when the Padres will win a World Series, isn't it? When I'm dead.
When my newborn is in her 50s, she will come by my gravesite, and Tatis the fourth will have, you know, lifted the.
Well, if they don't do any, if they're just going to be bad, I'm going to be negative and shitty about it, and I'm going to try to be really funny about it.
So yes, that's all we have is our humor.
There you go.
And if you like to see that, check out thekeptfaith.com. Check out the Kept Faith on Twitter, Instagram. We'll be processing it and trying to be funny about it, I guess. We'll talk maybe after the season, and maybe sometime during the postseason. Maybe we just enjoy the postseason as baseball fans. Watch the Dodgers get killed, and
that's all I want to see now.
Yeah, that's what I want to see.
So. Are the Reds totally out of it too?
It looks like it's the Cardinals are going to be against.
You know what's funny is I literally just looked that up.
That's who I would choose if.
Yeah, the Reds. I mean, the Reds got to really pull it together. They're 5.5 back. I mean,
you know what this means?
It's the Cardinals again. God,
that means we have to like root for the Giants, because I can't root for Atlanta.
I just
can't. There's too many 90s memories there. I can't root for St. Louis. Same thing.
I'll root for Milwaukee.
Yeah, give me Milwaukee.
Milwaukee. Okay. Yeah. Milwaukee.
All right. Yeah, well, hey, we'll check in during the postseason, and hopefully our Brewers will be kicking ass and taking names. Right? check us out. Yeah, on all our platforms, and we'll see you
at the movies.
The post Tingler era.
Please, Lord.
He's coming back. Bye. Let's go, Padres!